The weekend is near, and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
We finally got there. We are at the grand final for 2018. And this time last week, Collingwood and West Coast was the matchup that very, very few were expecting. But that's what we've got Saturday afternoon, and it's going to be a beauty. We'll dissect that, as well as all the Brownlow medal fallout, gossip and titbits, on the Fox Footy Podcast, brought to you by NIB, health cover how it should be. G'day everyone, I'm Ben Waterworth, and firstly, let's welcome foxsports.com.au's chief Brownlow tracker correspondent, Max Lawton.
I call this meeting of the Victorian Football League to order.
Yes.
West Coast made the grand final, guys. What are we going to do?
Can you believe it?
I thought we plotted all of this out so that they couldn't get in.
Victorian Football
League. We can't let them in. This is disgraceful.
We'll talk about that in a tick, and this the remarkable journey that the Eagles have been on. Speaking of correspondence, we now cross over to our chief insect correspondent for Fox Cricket, Tom Morris.
Can you explain that to the listeners, please, Ben?
So, Tom, you made your cricket commentary debut. Very well done.
Thank you.
From what I saw. And then I, on Sunday night, I was flicking through Fox Sports News and saw you giving an update on the bee situation, the buzzy bee situation at North Sydney Oval. And
bees?
They all congregated around the boundary fence.
There was a stray hive of bees.
Yes. Bees?
Deep fine league behind Wes Agar at North Sydney Oval.
Wes Agar.
And, I was told to go and do a colour piece in front of the bees, and they asked how many there were. I said, about a million. I've got no idea.
It's like a jelly beans in a jar.
Yeah, I've got absolutely no idea. I think a million sounded about right. And then
probably wrong.
It was a nice round figure.
Yes.
And then they asked,
what type of bees
what
are
sort
they?
Of bees were they? And I can't even name one type of bee, apart from the queen bee.
Honey?
Honey bee. Anyway, so I had very little to offer aside from me standing in front of bees. And it was
quite entertaining, at least.
It's not what I expected when I turned up to North Sydney Oval to watch the New South Wales versus Victoria blockbuster.
And you were one of the few to turn up, which was...
No, there were actually quite a few people there, Max.
Oh, really? Okay, sorry.
If you watched the game, you'd realise the hill was quite full.
I did watch it, actually.
Including a silly Sunday-type activity with people dressed in all different outfits.
As in, knocked out of the footy finals the day before, you reckon they'll make the most of the JLT
rugby finals,
Cup.
I reckon, yeah.
Right, rugby finals.
To be fair, Tom, I did turn on Fox Cricket, which I believe exists, according to some advertising.
501.
Campaign. Yes. Very exciting times. To hear your dulcet tones.
Did you?
30 minutes later, I'd watch 30 minutes of JLT Cup cricket without seeing you or hearing you once. I was rather disappointed.
Oh,
although
really?
Although Victoria was winning, so I was okay with that.
So you're a classic non-cricket fan.
Correct.
By saying a team is winning.
They were winning. They were.
My mum used to say, who's winning? And I used to say, you don't know anything about it.
That must have been very frustrating for you.
Oh, it really annoyed me. We don't speak much anymore. No, we do. We're fine.
How long left in your video game, Tom?
Can you just pause it? Well done, though. Congratulations. On,
it was great.
Plenty more to come.
Yeah, well. Make sure you tune into Channel 501 on Wednesday this week, Victoria versus at WA.
At the Junction?
The Junction Oval. And also on Sunday, if you're a little bit dusty after the grand final at the Junction Oval as well, Victoria is playing someone.
Well, let's talk about the
Who
grand
knows?
Final briefly, because this time last week, I think, did almost all of us tip that it'd be a Richmond and Melbourne grand final?
No, Tom tipped West Coast to win.
Right.
That
was a sort of a pessimistic kind of tip, though.
No, it wasn't. It was honestly a tip in my head.
Right.
I just think West Coast at their best are better than Melbourne at their best at home, and that's why I tip West Coast as much as it hurt. I think I can actually step back away from being a Melbourne supporter and actually see the team for what they are, and that is a young, talented team that still lacks experience in really hard and finals matches. Hawthorn and Geelong were great wins, but I did think West Coast was going to be one step too far. Not to the extent that it proved, but I thought the Eagles would win.
I don't think anyone thought either of the games would go as they did, essentially. You might have picked the result, you might have picked West Coast winning, you might have even picked a Pies upset. I know at least one person on the Fox Footy broadcast did. I don't remember exactly who, but you know, no one thought either of those games would go as they would. And interestingly for me, they went sort of in the same way, you know, a team dominating early in the game, but both games were almost over in the second quarter, but they felt very different. Mm. And I think that was because for one of them, Melbourne lost their game. And that's not to denigrate West Coast at all, but Melbourne lost that game, whereas Collingwood won against Richmond because of how impressive they were. Collingwood played the best half of footy we've seen all year, the best half I've seen under Nathan Buckley. Incredibly impressive. And I think if they can play to that level, they are clearly the flag favourites, which they are in all the betting markets, which some people found a bit strange, but I think that's why.
There's a lot to sort of dissect in that. I think in Friday night, though, Tom, you were at the ground as well, sitting in the press box. I was
amongst
the punters, in the MCC.
Oh, yes.
And I don't think I've ever left a game so just genuinely shocked by what occurred over the past 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
Because the first quarter was so intense. Like, just the feeling at the ground was intense. How the game played out, I'm sure, on TV was just so intense. And then shock just sort of started to come in as Collingwood kicked away. And then I think it was Steele Sidebottom who might have sealed the game that fourth quarter. And it's like, the reality is, the Richmond are beatable. They have been beaten, and Collingwood is into a grand final. Sort of hard to comprehend.
Yeah, Collingwood get ahead, and you think, oh, they're making a good fist of this. And then they get 2, 3, or 4 goals ahead, and you think, geez, it might be hard for Richmond here, but, you know, it's nowhere near game over. And all of a sudden, they're 45 or 50 points up, and you actually think to yourself, the Tigers cannot win. Statistically, they're not going to win this game. Mm. And it's quite an incredible feeling to have before half time.
Yeah.
Because there's so long left in the match. Yeah. Now, the Tigers gave it a crack, clearly, in the second half, but couldn't get back. But the fact that the margin was 44 at halftime, 42?
Yeah, and 44 at halftime and 53 at its highest point.
During the second
quarter?
Yeah.
Mm.
At that point, no one comes back from that. We're not having another North Melbourne versus Essendon 2001 game or whatever year it was. This was game over. And Collingwood had this momentum, which we saw from Richmond last year and the Western Bulldogs the year before. And they picked it up and they didn't let go.
I think one thing that has been, I don't think totally lost, but hasn't been discussed enough, has been the coaching performance, I think, of Nathan Buckley v. Damien Hardwick. So at the ground, it's one of the best things about going to the ground is you just sort of see how matchups work inside the arcs, I think, in particular. And not once, really, was Alex Rance able to get off Jordan Ngoi, who was playing as the deepest forward throughout the night, to try and impact what was going on at centre-half forward, where Mason Cox was manned up by David Asprey, who was clearly less than 50%.
Mistake.
I thought it was a coaching mistake as well. But and full credit to Nathan Buckley for identifying that. And then I think Damien Hardwick deserves, I think, some criticism for not adjusting or being flexible on the fly.
Damien Hardwick had a pretty ordinary night, I think. And this is not for me to criticise a coach that has clearly won a flag and been very successful. But the tactics to stop Mason Cox all year has been you plant someone in front of him so he can't reach out and take marks over others. He's very good above his head when no one's in front of him. But they didn't do that. And for whatever reason, they couldn't plant someone in front of Mason Cox. And as a result, he just kept on clunking marks. Eight of them. Eight contested grabs.
Marks. It's incredible. I think the second most we've seen in the final, I think Chad Corns had 9, maybe 2002
Corns, yes, that's right.
I believe that is something I saw on Twitter. Was this lost on Thursday night rather than Friday night, though?
Selection, you're thinking,
so,
Maxie?
David Asprey, we talked about all Friday as being ill. He was in hospital getting rehydrated, not because he was so ill he needed to be in hospital, but because that's where you get rehydrated.
Yes.
Sort of dramatised it a little bit. Dustin Martin, we knew from Monday when David King talked about how he had more important, a worse knee injury than people were speaking about. It wasn't about that he wasn't going to play. It was about that he was going to play perhaps below par, and that's exactly what happened. Richmond had 10 or 11 players below their average player ranking points, I think was in the paper the next day. And I think a few of those could have been solved. It's a tough situation, obviously, because even at Dusty at 70%, you're probably going to play, but some of those players clearly were not up to scratch where they should have been for a finals game.
So you were in the press conference afterwards, Tom, where Damien Hardwick was asked about Dustin Martin and, looking back in hindsight, whether he should have played. I think no matter what, as Maxie mentioned, Dusty was always going to play, but clearly he was attending. He actually attended quite a fair few centre bounces, but then the stoppages around the ground, he wasn't there because he basically went straight from centre bounces to full forward and didn't do much else for the night. He had 6 kicks, and most of them were kicks off the ground, I think.
Yeah. Well, Dusty didn't play well, but he was always going to play. But the PR mistake Richmond made was flat-batting David King and all the suggestions by journalists that he wasn't 100%, because he clearly wasn't 100%, and he was nowhere near it. The fact that he attended the first centre bounce and then went straight forward immediately shows that. If they came out and said, he's going to play, we think he's fine, that's it. That's fine. But instead, they went on the offensive, and it actually came back to bite them on the bum.
Yeah, because there was something certainly wrong with him. So one thing I do, you have to give credit to Richmond for, and a lot of their players were down, as you mentioned, Maxie. But probably until the final quarter, halfway through the final quarter, the intensity really went out of the game then. Yeah. But they were on. Like, Richmond were not 100% on, but they were giving intensity from the first bounce right up until that point. Melbourne, conversely, Thomas, gave no intensity, or certainly at the start of the game, were goalless in that first half. And therein lies, I think, the difference between the two finals, is that Richmond, I think, really did give quite a fair bit, whereas the Demons just simply didn't rock up.
I find it remarkable that the Demons weren't ready for that.
Were they ready?
How can you go into a prelim final and have a pressure rating of, I think it was 153?
Yeah,
And how can several players not lay tackles, including a midfielder and your captain like Nathan Jones?
There were 7 and 37 tackles total. Their lowest for the season was in the low 50s.
It should have been 50 points at quarter time.
Yes.
And it should have been 120 points at the end of the match, really. I know that late goals made the scoreline look a little bit better for the D's, but it was an abysmal performance. And I think in many respects, the Demons will be haunted by it all summer and next year until they rectify it, which is tough because getting to a prelim is difficult. Winning a prelim is even harder. And until they win one, the ghosts of the weekend aren't going to be buried.
I did find it not funny but interesting that the whole thing that a lot of people talked about going into this final series was experience, and they had none of it. And the one thing that, to counter that was Jordan Lewis has so much experience. And from what I saw in the first quarter, he directly gave up 2 goals. Handballs direct to an Eagles player who then kicked a goal or assisted a goal. They just looked shocking in that first quarter, like direct turnovers. And you could tell, I think Max Gordon wrote about it in the Herald Sun after the match. They were just shaken. They just looked terrified. And you could see it in the way they were playing. They didn't have that dare. They didn't have that run. They didn't have that transition from D50 to forward 50. And they weren't able to play their game. West Coast was playing their game better than Melbourne does.
West Coast
all year has not been good at the type of game that Melbourne plays.
Yep.
That was the key. If Melbourne could play its game, it could get the upper hand. And that's why I believed in the Demons. Yep. I was ready to tip them if they made the grand final. But there they are losing to West Coast. And fair play to West Coast too. They didn't need to play at their absolute best to thump a team in a prelim.
They were pretty close to their best, though.
They were very, very good. So, but this is the point I wanted to make about comparing the two prelims, is that Collingwood, I think, played as well as it could possibly play in that first half.
Agree.
West Coast can play better.
Yeah.
So that's the scary thing, and they still won by 60-odd, right? So West Coast can come to the MCG and play even better than they just did when they thumped a team that was worthy of being in the prelims.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's a scary proposition for the Pies to deal with, because if they don't play at that level, then what do they do?
Talking to a couple of Demons players over the past few days, they said that they couldn't even hear their teammates from 2 metres away.
Right.
Such was the noise at Optus Stadium. Now, that's probably okay if you're an Eagles player, because you might be used to it throughout the year, slash you've got everyone cheering for you.
Mm.
But if you're not used to that and you can't hear someone call for the ball that's as far away from me to you, which is 2 metres, then it must be very difficult to get used to.
It's a fascinating insight, Thomas.
Thank you.
Is it regular? Sort of what you've heard throughout the teams this year, or was it that game in particular?
I think the weekend was a level above.
Yeah.
And I did speak to Glenn Bartlett, the Melbourne president, and who was a former West Coast player, played 7 games for the Eagles, and he was at the game. And he reckons there's an echo in the stadium.
Right.
He reckons that the noise is amplified because of the way the stadium is built.
Yes.
And it is so suffocatingly, is that a word?
Yeah, sure.
Suffocatingly loud.
Yeah, we'll play it.
That it's just incredibly difficult to deal with initially. And then if the game starts going against you, it just gets louder and incrementally louder to a point where it's just ridiculous.
So I noticed, Tom, that the Instagram stories from you started to die down around about halfway through the second quarter.
Also from Sam Datto, who was a Melbourne supporter who was at the ground. The
AFL 360 assistant producer made the trip over to the West. But your Instagram story started to die down about halfway through the second quarter, Thomas. Just take us into the mind of a Melbourne supporter at that time.
Well, I was at the Light Brigade bar in Sydney, actually, with a good friend of mine, Sam Daish, and a few others. And I was wearing my Melbourne scarf. There were plenty of Melbourne supporters there, also some West Coast supporters. And the reality is, when your team's getting done like this, all you can go and do is buy 6 or 7 espresso martinis that are on special and just continue from there.
Yes,
I was in Sydney because I had cricket work the next day.
Yes.
I wasn't shattered in any way, really. It was just disappointing that the D's didn't give it a crack. But in some ways, it's better not to be heartbroken and just think, well, you're just not up to it. Mm. And that's all I was thinking, being a Melbourne supporter. And yes, the Instagram story has died down because the phone was in my pocket.
But I think the D's are still well set up, though, Maxi, for a crack at this over the next 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, and we talked about how young they are, and that sort of youth is then going to grow older, as youth does happen to grow older generally in life.
Yes.
And therefore they will be able to move on from this. I think there is a chance it could scar them a little bit, but we also thought that about them just missing out on making the 8.
Yeah, but that's not, well, yeah, that was one individual event actually, but it's a lot harder to get over the scar if you need to win a prelim to get over it.
I'm
just making the 8.
I understand, but I think that means they can still get to the prelim and then the scar could really resurface, but they're at least getting that far. Mm. And they could be in a much easier draw than having to travel to West Coast, which is probably the second hardest possible other than Richmond.
Yeah, well, we thought West Coast going to West Coast was going to be easier than playing against Richmond.
Well, yes, I know, we did.
The caveat is Richmond might not have been at their best against Collingwood, and we don't know how West Coast would have been had they played Collingwood as well, if the matchups were different. But certainly going to West Coast was a daunting experience, and it proved to be an impossible task for the Dees.
Collingwood went to West Coast a couple of weeks ago. They'll play this weekend, and they gave it a great go and arguably should have won in the end. They had control of that game for most of the time. We'll talk about the Pies and the Eagles a little bit more in depth later in the podcast. We'll have Xavier Ellis joining us from the West Coast Eagles. But let's work through the week chronologically. Last night, Thomas, you briefly graced the Brownlow red carpet. Disappointing there were no photos from Getty or AAP or the Herald Sun's Michael Klein throughout the night, but you always enjoy the Brownlow Medal red carpet. Anything interesting to sort of come out of, that?
I actually don't really enjoy the Brownlow Medal red
carpet.
You
love it. Heavily doubt that. Come on.
There's probably elements that I don't mind, but what was your question? I was there for radio. It's just interesting the way that some players and their partners walk in and they're clearly very happy to be there. Like, this is a real chance to show themselves off and take some nice Instagrams and be in the media spotlight a bit and have a few drinks because their season's finished. Some players, and I won't name them, clearly find it a chore to be there. It's just annoying. They're not going to win. They're not going to get many votes. They don't really want to get blind with their mates, or they might have a grand final this weekend like the Collingwood players and the small West Coast function. And it's not really football's night of nights for them. But the red carpet is a glamorous event, but it doesn't... I know we joke, but overall, it doesn't interest me at all. I actually don't care what people are wearing. It doesn't bother me.
Now, at any point, did Nadia Bartel tell you that you look beautiful? Because she seemed to tell everyone else that.
Nadia Bartel's a very lovely lady, and congratulations to her and Jimmy on the impending birth of their child.
Very positive about everyone's looks, which I enjoy on the cover.
I had a good chat to Gary Ablett's wife, actually. He's a lovely lady. And Alex Pendlebury as well, and also Tom Mitchell's girlfriend.
Hannah?
Because my job, Ben, as the real whipping boy of the radio station, was to hold the microphone pack while the talent was being interviewed. While I was doing that, I'm just standing there like a loose change, just standing over the side. May as well just speak to the partner and just had a good chat to some of these people, and you know, they all look lovely and the men look beautiful as well, but that's the way it is.
There you go.
Nothing to add, really.
I'm sure you did a fine job.
I've always thought
it's almost like it's a rather empty event.
I've always found the Brownlow to be a massively overrated event and award. It's a flawed award, Ben.
There's a little bit of topic about this. Kane Corns was pretty strong on this, is that it should be taken away from the umpires.
No, I disagree with that. It is what it is, and I hate that statement. Keep it with the umpires, but it's shocking. Don't change it, but it's poor.
I don't mind it, Maxie. I don't mind it.
I'm happy with the uniqueness of it. The problem that they had was, so I don't know exactly how it works from a production perspective, but some people have to know the result to program the show, right?
Well, the votes come up very, very quickly.
They were really fast typers.
Yes.
They get people, stenographers from the courts, I believe, do it. So what has to happen is they have to know how it goes and they have to plot out the night. The problem is they knew that Tom Mitchell was going to win it with 3 rounds to go. And they knew with 6 rounds to go he was about to pull out and clearly make it that he was going to be the winner. So you have to make it the slowest 16 rounds possible. And then Gil has to read out 17 to 23 as quickly as humanly possible to get to the end once there's no drama left in it. That made it a really disappointing TV experience just because of how the votes fell out.
Yeah, I'd like a close vote count in the future. I mean, let's think about how the Brownlow started. And not many people know this. There used to be one field umpire, and that field umpire used to award best on ground. That's it.
Yes.
So he used to go, you're best on ground, you get the Brownlow vote for this game. And that's all the award used to be. So best on ground would win you a Brownlow in the early days.
Yeah, we're talking about the 20s.
But now you have three field umpires, all of whom have biases, clearly, and so they should, against or for players that they like or might argue with them during the game, trying to give a 3-2-1 in a unanimous fashion without the use of stats when the game is so congested and so frantic in the wet sometimes and players they might not know too well. It is so flawed, but it just is the way it is.
It is what it is, Tom.
It is what it is.
Do you have a problem with any particular votes? Dane Beams having 32 touches and 5 goals against North and not getting a vote.
Yeah, and Max...
The first time ever anyone's had that much 32 disposals and 5 goals and not polled.
Clearly, that deserves 3 votes, if not a vote or 2. Max Gawn against St Kilda, I remember that game, was absolutely dominant, but didn't poll a vote.
Was that not a sign right there that a ruckman cannot win the Brownlow
now? It is a midfielder's award for a reason. And Tom Mitchell had every right to win it because no player has ever picked up more disposals in a season than Tom Mitchell.
You can. It's a very impressive thing to do. We can complain about it being a midfielder's ward all you like, but that's sort of at the extremes of how much you can get disposal.
What was the most surprising aspect of the night for you, Maxie? Whether it was a snubbed vote or a snubbed player or a record that was set?
Well, Nick Smith joined Tom Lonergan on most games without polling a vote.
Oh, really? So, is that right?
191. You would expect he would surpass Lonergan.
Since he's polled a vote?
Neither have ever polled a vote.
Has he not played 200 games yet, Nick Smith?
This is eligible games. So home and away only.
Gotcha.
Keep in mind.
So very good for Max.
I think other websites may have tried to use the stat incorrectly because of that. Good job.
Max at his best.
.com.au.
Yes.
And then other things that may have popped up. I found it interesting that three of the top nine, I believe it was, were players from bottom four clubs.
Yep.
Jack Stephen polled really well.
Yes.
Dane Beam's doing really well. And obviously Patrick Cripps getting to 20 in the Wooden Spoon team.
That's an unbelievable effort.
The best since Ablett in 2011 when he polled 23.
That to me is a handicapped Brownlow. If you're going to do like the stall gift, Patrick Cripps starts a long way back he somehow almost got up to the leader in a team that won two games.
It's incredible.
Was it 14 votes in games that he didn't win?
Yeah, they didn't win many the Blues.
So at some point, theoretically, Carlton will be not terrible. And at that point, Patrick Cripps is going to win a Brownlow.
In a perfect world, they are between 8 and 12, and that's when he's going to win one.
Well, yeah, otherwise he's going to get 50 votes, apparently.
And what about Angus Brayshaw's 21 votes, surpassing Clayton Oliver and Max Gawn for top Melbourne vote-getter?
Well, it's the helmet rule, partly, because he's very noticeable with his helmet. He's also very good on both sides of his body.
Yes.
He had a very good year, but I don't think he
started in the VFL.
I think he would, and Melbourne recognised, because he wasn't even invited to the Brownlow medal, that he didn't have a year worthy of a top three finish. But I think he had a decent year. I think Clayton Oliver had a better year, highlighted by the fact that he's going in for surgery on both shoulders as well, which again shows how tough he's been over the past couple of months. I think Max Gawn probably had a better year as well, but this is the way the votes go. They don't always go in a predictable fashion.
And Brayshaw, the first player since Simon Black in 2007 to not even be in the All-Australian squad of 40, but finish in the top three of the Brownlow.
Is that right?
Yes. Prittis and Mitchell won Brownlows when they weren't in the 22. Yeah. And Black did the same thing in 2008.
And Woden in 2000 as well wasn't in the 22.
Oh, we haven't had a close vote count since Shane Woden.
He was there
in
last night.
Was he really?
Well, all the Brownlow medalists get invited.
Yeah, how was Shane?
I didn't speak to him, but he looked like my childhood hero, yes.
Well, he hasn't changed, still got the blonde hair.
Right. He's coaching up in Queensland.
In Brisbane.
Yeah.
Find some stuff out there. Good on you, Shane Woden. It's now time for Australia's favourite segment here on the Fox Footy podcast. It's Fair or Farce.
I was going to do some like Black Eyed Peas music or something.
Oh, hey, that's not bad.
Give us something.
I've forgotten all of them.
All right.
Where is the farce?
I'm sitting with two unusual units. Max.
Hi.
To you first. Fair or farce, thanks to NIB. The MCG should have a mortgage on hosting the AFL Grand Final for the next 300 years.
So who are they paying?
Fair or farce?
300 years is a long time. We might have population centres growth and then therefore...
The sea levels will be above the whole country by then. So.
Look, your basic premise is about the MCG, should it always host the grand final or not, and that is fair. I am totally fine with that. I understand the idea that they should do it in home grounds or perhaps in the biggest stadium in the home state of the team that deserves hosting rights. Sure, Optus Stadium could have a lovely grand final experience, but I like having it at the destination of the MCG, the 100,000 people. I don't want a grand final at ANZ, at Spotless or something, if GWS finishes on top of the ladder. I know it's probably some big bias in there, but I just think the experience of being at the MCG makes it unlike any other grand final type match in world
sports. If I hear one more argument comparing it to the Super Bowl and all that moves around.
Or the EPL.
The FA Cup's always at Wembley. So
that's true.
Yeah. Going to shove the EPL up your backside.
Yes, you're right.
Ben,
yes,
Thomas. The Brownlow night is too slow and boring. Fair or
yes,
fast?
Yes, that's fair, Thomas. That's absolutely fair, Thomas. I think we could get it done an hour less. I think no doubt about that. Oh, there are some things in between the votes that are interesting.
Like ads?
No, I wouldn't say the ads are too interest me too much there, Tom.
Like players getting retired when they're not retired?
Yeah, yeah, wasn't that it? Michael Scatelli. Bit embarrassing.
Yeah, that was quite embarrassing. But
as a tweeter may have suggested, that was indeed... Risky telly.
That was Timothy Bahadur at his best. No, that's fair, Tom. It is too slow and boring. We can probably chop a few interviews. I think that's probably what we can chop.
And Bruce was a little off his game, I felt.
Was he?
At times.
I don't mind Bruce. I just thought the way it shouldn't be, the TV should be secondary to the event itself. So the TV camera should be peeping in and having a look at what the event looks like. It shouldn't be a TV event first and foremost, the Brownlow Medal.
It's been a TV event for years and years and years.
Yeah, but I don't. Well, yes, but not to this extent. It's gone too far now.
Too far.
Shouldn't be finishing after kids go to bed. Right. The Brownlow count.
We're on school holidays, though.
It's a dinner that lasts till 11 p.m. Dinners shouldn't last till 11 p.m.
The Brownlow count should fit. The count itself should finish at 9:30.
Yeah, that's fair.
Max.
Hi.
Fair or fast? This will be the last daytime grand final.
Fair. I could see that.
Yep.
I could see it being Twilight next year.
I think Twilight works. Ben, what are your thoughts on that?
I'm very selfish with this, Tom. I want to finish my shift at 8 p.m. or 9 p.m.
Oh, yeah, no, I prefer, from a pure selfish work perspective, I love a day grand final.
Yes.
I like getting in at 10, leaving at 7 or 8.
It seems inevitable that in the next 2 years we'll be going to a Twilight grand final.
Yep. Yeah. Max, is it your go? No, it's Ben's go. It is. Fair or fast?
Yeah.
I found this interesting.
You're
last
laughing
night,
at
actually.
Your own.
Yeah,
fair
I am.
Fast,
I am. Yeah. Whoever writes these is a genius. Fair or fast, thanks to NIB. The AFL has too many corporates and not enough players at the Brownlow. Six per team. Angus Brayshaw not there. Dane Swan not there a few years ago.
Yeah, so I always... So you look at... I think that's fair. So you look at the overall night. I've been once to the Brownlow just as a punter and sort of got that through a corporate kind of ticket as well. When you consider how many players and teams there are, for clubs don't have that many tables like assigned, do they really? Mm. It really is quite a big corporate night. So... It looks pretty nice on TV because it is a TV event, though, Tom.
And the problem is, if you want to invite Dane Swan, you have to invite the Sportsbet social media writer as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, what about that?
Otherwise, how are they going to tweet?
Amazing.
He was in good form.
Max, fair or fast, thanks to NIB. The AFL needs to reach out to the USA as a reasonably untapped marketplace and spend big over there.
Fast, because you're not going to spend big enough to convince players to pick AFL over other sports.
No, but there's no club... Okay, devil's advocate to that. There's no club sport in America, or not a lot of club sport in America. So you miss out on the NBA, you're playing street ball with your mates 2-on-2. You miss out on playing NFL.
Well, that's not true.
You either go to Canada or you're not playing club
football. There are development leagues actually popping up in the NFL. The XFL, such as from Vince McMahon.
Yes. I know there are, but it's nowhere near as prominent to be an amateur sportsman over there below those elite sports. So as a result, there is all these sports people that are good college athletes that do not play any sport after they leave school.
Absolutely. There is merit to the idea of going over there and getting some of the many hundreds of thousands of athletes who do not quite get to the elite level but are still good enough athletes to potentially play at our elite level and bring them over. That's fair enough. But I would not waste big money on that because the AFL has other priorities it should be worrying about within our borders.
Such as?
Tasmania.
Yeah.
Queensland.
That's technically not within our borders, Tasmania, but I'll let you off the hook there.
That's
not how borders
you
work.
You go there. Come on, Thomas. Straighten up.
Is that too far? Sorry.
It's inaccurate, too.
See, the AFL isn't raiding Ireland either because they've got this relationship with the GAA and they don't want to annoy them too much. So it's up to the clubs to go and do it off their own bat, which is great if you're rich enough like Collingwood to go and do that. But for most of the clubs, they can't afford to go and raid other countries' talent. But surely in Mason, if you've got an extreme athlete like Mason Cox at 211 centimetres who can mark like that, that's the future footballer.
This has really been gathering some momentum since Friday night, you know, when people have been looking for a new angle for Mason Cox, if there is one to find. And this seems to have been the one. Yes. He used to be at Oklahoma State
What
University.
Sport did he play before this?
Oh, Max, actually, that's something we need to investigate.
Does Scott Pendlebury have a similar background?
Mark Butsalves used to be a steeplechaser.
Corey Gregson's a gymnast.
Yes. And the last one, whose go is it?
Mine, I think, Tom.
It is yours. Ben.
Yeah.
You really keep a track well.
Yeah, sorry about that. Fair or fast? No Sam Newman means no footy show in 2019.
Yeah, fair. I think so. Well, no, because the
All right, you've turned.
No, I have turned. Sorry, I'm going to redo that. I think that's a fast because... Aren't Channel 9 planning to do a rebranded or redone version of the footy show?
The impression I got from his 9-minute, 15-second speech was that they're either reworking the show or getting rid of it. They weren't sure yet. Yeah. So there is certainly potential. Yeah. I can't imagine Channel 9 not doing some sort of football programming during the week that isn't footy classified.
I think if there is a show on a Thursday night next year, I doubt it'll be known as the footy show. And if that's the case... I don't think Sam will be there.
I think we need a footy show, but I don't think we need the footy show, do we?
Oh, it's real sort of poignant.
Yeah, I've stolen that from an opinion piece in a paper last week.
Oh, right.
But no, you're right. Something's just come to an end. I think the front bar is so funny.
Yeah.
Isn't it? It's good content.
It's a much better show to watch.
But there's no reason why the Footy Show can't rebrand and have some sort of rejuvenation in another way, but it needs to change.
Normally at 8:30 on a Thursday night, I'm watching Sarah and Anna and the team doing the replayed version of the lowdown.
Yes.
Finals lowdown, in fact. Ooh. On Fox Footy on 8:30 on a Thursday night. But thanks to NIB, Health Cover How It Should Be, that was Verifas.
Yeah, it was.
Great work from you, Max. It's now time to turn our attention to West Coast and Collingwood. The West Coast Eagles in a home game taking on Collingwood, Max, at the MCG.
Like the Brisbane Geelong prelim.
Yes, from 2004, ooh, which Geelong was very close to winning, actually. Gary Ablett had a good game that night. It's going to be a really interesting tactical battle, I think. We talked about the West Coast Eagles getting the game on their terms. They had plus 50 marks against the Demons, which is just on their terms to an absolute T. Yeah. Whereas the Pies had their forward half game going. The Pies kicked a ridiculous amount of goals, Tom, and you wrote about this in your match report, a ridiculous amount of points from stoppages against the Tigers on Friday night. It was 60-8 or something
66
like that.
66-8, I think.
Yeah, ridiculous.
Well, it's not unusual for the Tigers to give away stoppages or give away clearances. That's clearly, I mean, the 18th for clearances this year without getting too nitty-gritty about it. Yeah. But then they expect to win it back.
They were first on turnovers, though.
Yeah, yes. Well, to put it in layman's terms, they just couldn't win it back and Collingwood made them pay. So, in effect, Collingwood burnt them at their biggest strength. And that was a credit to Buckley and probably a decisive factor in the game.
So how much do we read into the two previous meetings between these two clubs? So round 17, Maxi, we saw Nick Natanui go down with that knee injury, but the Eagles were still able to prevail and temporarily put a few doubts to bed about their record at the MCG. Mm-hmm. And then in the qualifying final, Collingwood basically led for 80% of the game. And then the Eagles came with a big run in that last quarter. Lewis Jetta kicking that famous match-winning goal, his only goal so far for the season. Do we read too much into those two games?
Well, I think personnel-wise, it's relatively equal. You've obviously got Adam Treloar back for Collingwood, which is quite crucial. In terms of history, there's some interesting stuff in that the fact that this is the second time they're playing this finals.
Mm.
And the past four times under this final system, the teams have played in the qualifying final and then in the grand final. The team that has won the qualifying final has always lost the grand final.
Yes.
Dating back most recently to West Coast and Hawthorn in 2015 when they won over there in week one and then lost quite convincingly on grand final day. So that might be in the back of the minds of some of the Eagles players who are remaining from that side.
Well, and there's a few players from that 2015 game as well, Tommy, who no doubt would be wanting to rectify. They won't say it publicly, but they'll be wanting to rectify their performances both individually and collectively from that 2015 grand final.
Yeah, you don't want to be a grand final loser, but you don't want to be a two-time grand final loser. Then you've burnt two opportunities to be a premiership player. I mean, Nathan Buckley was one of them.
Yeah,
as hard as that is, doesn't...
And a Norm Smith medalist.
And a Norm Smith medalist as well. It's a difficult one because how much do you reflect if you're Adam Simpson or these West Coast players on what's happened in the past? Given it's 3 years later, there's a fair bit that's gone under the bridge since then, but I think this West Coast team is pretty fresh and they'll be ready to go.
It is. I think there's going to be about 12 players maybe remaining from that 2015 grand final for the Eagles. Jack Darling had a really bad day that day by his own admission.
That still gets talked about.
It does.
That's how bad it was.
But he has turned into, at his best, he's one of the most dominant and hardest to stop players in the competition.
Yep.
When he's up and flying, he's really hard to
All-Australian contender at some points this season.
Where do you think the game, Maxi, will be won and lost, in your humble opinion?
I think Collingwood does need to dominate that midfield like they did against Richmond. Dominate the clearances, dominate the contested ball. That can be key for them. West Coast hasn't been amazing at that, and they did really well to stop Melbourne from being so strong at that in the prelim. So if they can get on top of that again, Jack Redden have another really good game like he has this final series. It's him and Sidebottom as the contenders for the Gary Ayres Award, I believe, for the coach's player of the final. So he could be very important too. I could see that. And then it's stopping Darling and Kennedy, who looked really dominant at times against Melbourne. And the key for West Coast has been once they get it inside 50, they are probably the most deadly team in the comp. It's getting enough conversions, getting enough attempts.
Yep.
If they can do that, they should win.
If it's wet, Collingwood are heavily advantaged.
And it is probably going to be wet, I think.
Yeah, it's meant to be 13 degrees, but hopefully it's not wet on Sunday for the JLT game.
Oh,
Ben.
Yes. Oh, of course not.
But the covers will be on. Don't worry about that.
Can we have the reverse conversation about Melbourne's worried about the heat? West Coast, they're from Perth. They've never dealt with such cold. 13 degrees.
What's rain?
They're going to be wearing coats during the game? Oh,
it's,
no.
Disaster. The reason why I think Collingwood advantage if it's wet, A, because I think Collingwood's midfield is deeper than West Coast. I think the top end of both midfields are superstars, but I think West Coast doesn't quite run as deep as Collingwood's. And young Collingwood players like Braden Sire and these guys, if you look at his stats, they're just as good as Clayton Oliver's and any other inside midfielder in the comp in recent weeks. And then the other aspect, clearly, which is obvious, is that if the ball's wet, then all of a sudden McGovern above his head, Barras above his head, Darling and Kennedy above his head aren't anywhere near as influential. They can't be.
Grand final games are often previewed and ultimately decided by the bottom six of both sides.
Yeah.
And when you sort of match the bottom six up, there's not too much of a difference. But I reckon the depth of Collingwood's midfield, you mentioned a player like Braden Sire, who had an awesome first quarter against GWS in the semi-final and then was very solid against the Tigers on Friday night. Maxie, that bottom six for the Pies might prove to be a big winner for them.
Yep, they've been really good at that this whole final series, as you said. So if they can lift like that. West Coast had some very good players too. They had very few passengers against Melbourne.
Mm.
I think Nathan Vardy may be one of them, but I remember looking through that list after the game and just thinking all of these guys had a really good contribution. Like Jamie Cripps might have been best on ground, and he's not necessarily bottom six, but he can be on his bad days.
I find the term bottom six just interesting as well. Like in what other game do we rank... What other football game do we rank players from 1 to 22 as if this player that's ranked 17th is nowhere near as valuable as the player who's ranked 11th?
But how many sports have 22 players for each team on a field? Like there's so many players there that it's almost just tempting to rank.
And it's not so delineated, so like NFL 11 players, but you can't do 1 to 11.
I'm not talking about what other game as in what other sport. We're talking about with the grand finals, but it's hardly mentioned throughout the home and away season, I think. The bottom six.
I think for big games, I think the top games, I think there's a little bit of comparison.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The top games, we talk about it, but it doesn't seem to matter in round eight, does it? Not as much.
Yeah, we tend to probably look at the entire list.
What we want from these bottom six, for lack of a better term, is just to play their role, just to fulfill their role. They don't need to dominate, just to do their job and then let the bakers bake. Let the big dogs do the job.
I imagine it because in round eight, if you're a good team, you can play your system and have a few passengers and be completely fine against Carlton, for example.
Yeah.
Whereas in the finals, you cannot get away with that.
No.
You have to have players playing at their best.
And even you can still be playing a good game, but if your opponent has a better game, then you're effectively a passenger. So it's not all reliant on what your output is. It's also what the opposition allows you to do or doesn't allow you to do.
Can we talk a little bit about the fact that it's Collingwood and West Coast?
Yes.
It's very interesting to me from a fandom perspective.
Fandom. Right. Explain what that means.
Well, so because you have Adam Treloar, I think it was. Eddie McGuire was definitely on the paper today in the front page of the Herald Sun in Melbourne saying all Victorians should be getting behind Collingwood, which is a preposterous idea, of course. Now, I don't hate Collingwood. I think Geelong's recent success over them has
softened your view.
Yes, very much so. Mm-hmm. It's more about Hawthorn, of course.
Yes.
But these are two pretty unlikable clubs. West Coast has a huge amount of fans.
Eastern Seaboard and me have filmed
They are bad winners, West Coast. The amount of boos that we had during the prelim when they were dominating Melbourne and the reaction, whether they win or lose, that apparently we're doing something wrong in our coverage. I understand there's a lot of fair criticisms, but a lot of unfair ones. It's just interesting to me, who are you guys wanting to win? I understand if you perhaps don't want to answer and don't want to be criticized.
I'll answer.
Who do you want to win?
I don't care. I'm not supporting anyone. I think it's a great story.
I say, which story do you prefer? Because there are some good stories either way as well.
22 versus 22, it doesn't bother me either way, 50-50. The Nathan Buckley story to me is the best story of them all.
I want Collingwood to win because of that.
Yeah, that's the only reason I'd want Collingwood to win. But I think West Coast as a club, and I know I've been critical of them on this podcast and other variety of mediums over the past couple of months, but as a club, they are quite incredible. They've got a waiting list for their membership.
Yeah.
They seem to make a grand final since they entered the competition every four or five years.
They've made eight in the AFL era. I think only Geelong has matched that, or perhaps they are ahead of Geelong.
They are a consistent juggernaut, and they are up there with Hawthorn in terms of the last 30 years and how they've performed. And for that, I respect them. And I think given how well they've played, by and large, since they last won a flag, they've made two grand finals since then. Since 2006?
Yes.
They probably deserve a flag over the last 10 years.
Yep.
I'm not sure, but they deserve one.
There are a lot of players on that team that deserve a flag. Josh Kennedy is a player who deserves to be a premiership player at some point in his career. Luke Shuey. The thing that annoys me about the West Coast story... The West Coast story.
Well, it actually makes perfect sense. Yes. Yeah. The West Coast story.
Yes. I want Nick Naniwi to have a flag on his resume, but he can't.
Yeah.
You sort of want Andrew Gaff to, even his situation this year aside, he's a player who deserves to have one at some point. So that almost takes it a little bit for me. I would love West Coast to win and for Nick Natalui to prove the people wrong who think he's not valuable enough, but him not being out there sort of...
I don't know whether it's because we're Victorians or not, but I always find the Victorian versus non-Victorian bias completely overblown. I couldn't care less where you're from.
We talked it all up last week. WA media was making it about that. Vic media was also making it about that.
Yeah, but I don't feel it at all. I don't think anything less of Adelaide or Sydney or Brisbane. You know I love Brisbane. Or yes. think anything more of Carlton or Collingwood or Melbourne or Essendon because of where they're situated.
Yeah.
It honestly makes no difference whatsoever. And it was amazing on this note, when I started at Fox Footy, I'd never even heard of anything south of the river or north of the river in Melbourne about the north versus south divide until our good friend Riley Beveridge brought it up. That had never even crossed my mind because to me, we're all Melbournians and in Australia, we're all Australians.
Well, that's stupid.
Well, I think the state biased. I mean, I can't speak for Western Australians because they and other states because they clearly feel as if the media is Victorian biased. Well, there's 10 teams here compared to 8 scattered all over the rest of the country. Of course, there's going to be a bias here. In fact, the player movement chart shows you there's a bias to Victorian clubs.
Yes.
What do you mean by the player movement chart?
Well, players are more likely to move to Victorian clubs than elsewhere, than non-Victorian
because
clubs.
Because there are more clubs and because more players are from here.
Exactly. So just a simple maths equation, really.
Yes, it is. And you were very good at maths back in Melbourne.
No, I wasn't. I wasn't. Didn't do maths in year 12, actually.
Oh, didn't you?
Didn't do methods? Disappointing. I figured you'd be an ace at methods, but I guess not.
Let's get a tip. And we just want to quickly touch on trades, I think, afterwards as well. There's always interesting things bubbling away there. But a winner, a margin, and a Norm Smith medalist, please.
Oh, is Kurt Heatherly going to win it?
Kyle Mills.
I'm trying to think of this logically.
Yes.
So there's a couple of things.
One, Joe Baker Thomas.
I thought Melbourne was going to win it, and West Coast beat them. So West Coast is a fair reason to tip them.
Come on, who wins it, Max?
It's also that Robert Walls has tipped Collingwood to win and win well.
Wow.
And based on that, West Coast is going to win by 22 points.
22, yes.
Norm Smith medalist Josh Kennedy after he kicks 5.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm never going with a key forward as a Norm Smith medalist. It just doesn't happen in the modern day game.
Well, I spent 2 seconds thinking of that, Tom, and you've negated my argument.
So I apologize. I don't say you're wrong yet, but you will be wrong on Monday.
Look forward to it.
This morning and yesterday I was tipping West Coast. I've changed my tip now because I've seen the forecast.
Yes.
And I'm tipping Collingwood by 14 points. And I think Jordan Degoe is just perfectly set up. Because he doesn't care about the occasion. In fact, he relishes the occasion, but he doesn't get nervous. He thinks, this is awesome. I get a chance to play in front of more people and show everyone else how good I am.
Yeah, built for it.
He's built for it. So I think he's tailor-made to win the Norm Smith, kicking 3 or 4 and a couple of very, very influential ones late.
Yeah, the weather has also swung my tip to Collingwood by 12 points. And Taylor Adams is tailor-made for
Has
Saturday.
He been best on ground this year many times,
I'm not sure. He was very close to best on ground on Friday night against Richmond.
A good
he was outstanding.
A good sign is how many 3 voters these players get throughout the season. Because then if you haven't been best on ground in any of the home and away games or very few, you're not just going to suddenly best on ground in a grand final. I feel like DeGoey's been the best 3 or 4 times.
Unless you're Tom Boyd and deserve to win the Norm Smith.
Well, yeah.
Actually, well, no, the Bond. But then...
Yeah. But as I said, I don't mind who wins. I just hope it's a close game because here's a stat. The average margin, including a draw, for the last 17 finals played is 44 points.
It's been a bad finals series.
Yeah.
And last year as well. So I don't know what it is, but clearly when a team gets ahead, the other team rolls over or the momentum for the team that's ahead just continues to tick along.
Good thing we're going to lengthen the goal square and allow teams to
rebound
quicker.
We might not.
Really?
Yeah, that might not come in. The commission has met. It was on the agenda and there'll be an announcement next week.
Next week, so next after week. The grand final.
Yeah, in October. I presume it's next week.
But it's probably for the best.
But is one announcement they sort of already have confirmed, and that was Gillon McLachlan talking on radio on Tuesday morning, was that the Suns and the Blues, Tom, won't be getting any priority picks this year, but they will be getting some kind of assistance.
Here's another stat for you. In Carlton's last 4 seasons, they've won 26 games. Fitzroy, in their last 4 seasons, won 27 games. If you want an indicator as to how bad Carlton has been, just look at that statistic.
Yeah, they haven't won more than 7 for 5 years.
Shocking. So if they're not deserving of a priority pick now, they never will be. The priority pick is dead. Because Gold Coast and Carlton are prime examples, if you want to have one, to get one. They're not going to get one now. No one will ever get one again.
Yeah, so have we seen the last of it? Have we seen the last of the priority pick handout?
Based on that, yes. How can you say no to Gold Coast, who are a basket case, and Carlton of the aforementioned stat? Well, I guess you just don't like priority picks.
I think part of the suggestion would be that throwing draft picks may not solve Gold Coast.
Well, nothing's going to solve it. But if you can give them 5 to 10% help here and there,
of course,
then surely, I mean, it's not a silver bullet, is it? It's just a little helping hand.
So, I actually prefer priority picks to the State League issue.
Which is apparently going to come through some State League assistance, so some mature age players coming in.
Two players per team before the draft the Gold Coast and Carlton get access to.
And you can trade them.
Yes, and you can trade them for picks. So that does make it interesting. And I think Carlton are probably a good chance to do that to try and get a pick for Mitch McGovern.
I think they're almost certain to do that. In fact, I think Carlton will trade a pick. The State League player, to get a pick for Mitch McGovern. Otherwise, how else are they going to get McGovern to the club?
I don't like the State League thing because, well, suddenly it's in vogue to pick State League players because of Tim Kelly and Bailey Fritch and guys like that. But that's a thing where if you are a really good recruitment team, really good scouting team, you deserve to get the credit and be able to pick those players in the 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s of the national draft and find these bargains. And just suddenly saying, oh, yeah, the worst teams, just get them. Even if they're not the best players in the crop, which I don't think they're going to be, I think Gold Coast is interested in Josh Corbett, is it, from Werribee?
Yes, Werribee VFL player.
As has been reported, and I think he's rated in the sort of 30s and 40s range. Yeah. So they're not getting a first-round pick.
Also interested in Sam Collins as well, Werribee player.
Oh, he has to get picked up, surely.
Yeah, he's certain.
It's just a helping hand, though. What I don't like is the other 16 clubs have spent money and resources all year.
That's what I mean.
In trying to find State League players, and then all of a sudden they're told they're not allowed to get the players they might want to get. Don't like it.
Any other little trade tidbits
what do you want to talk about,
Thomas? Well, I was quite interested by Jack Stevens' Brownlow polling on Monday night. 16 votes for
Stevens
the Saints.
With an apostrophe.
With an apostrophe. Thank you for picking that up, Thomas. Quite impressive for a team that really struggled this year. But I saw last week that Geelong, despite the vehement denials from coach and from player and from club, that Geelong still think he's very gettable.
It just shows that words mean very little in today's industry regarding trades, because things change very quickly and the Josh Shackey rule always comes in. Club denied it, player manager denied it.
You reported it.
I did, but yes. But what you see here is another situation where things can change. You know, Colin Young, Mitch McGovern's manager, said it was ridiculous mid-year that Mitch McGovern would want to leave at the end of the year, and it's going to happen now. So don't always trust the words. Neil Baum last week went on the offensive, as we spoke about earlier in the episode.
This always happens, particularly like we'll report something, you will, or another outlet will report something. It will get denied. The immediate assumption from fans a lot of the time is to assume, oh, well, they denied it. It can't possibly be true. Journalists, fake news. Can't believe you're lying to us. Stop lying about Adelaide, Tom. Tom, stop it. Lying. Stop it. And then it comes true. And there's a little bit of this belief in authority that people sometimes have, which is sort of in all society, I suppose. And maybe we should be a little bit more wary, a little bit more skeptical sometimes.
Yeah, I think so. And I think
can't believe you lied about Adelaide.
I think Jesse Hogan's lying. Probably in a similar state.
What's the go here? So the Greg Van Denham was pretty big in the Australian.
Yeah, I'm not sure he's going to go, Jesse Hogan, but certainly it's not as locked and loaded to stay as what Simon Goodwin said on the couch recently, or Melbourne would have you believe.
Right. So what do you believe? What's your hunch in where how that situation might play out?
I think it's unfair for me to say this is what will happen.
Yeah.
But what I do know is that the only way Jesse Hogan goes is if Freo come to Melbourne with a deal that Melbourne can't refuse and money to Hogan that Hogan can't refuse. There's no way Hogan's going to the club and going, I want to lift to Perth. I want to leave now.
Yeah. Does Stephen May have an impact in this?
Because potentially.
As was reported, the idea was that they would be not so much freeing up space, but bringing in and choosing May, or using the pick they get from Hogan to trade for May. Is that possible?
It's all possible. Anything's possible.
Especially with Nesquik.
I know. There's lots of possibilities this trade period, and it's going to be absolutely nuts. I look forward to doing podcasts with you as well, Ben.
Yes, podcasts will be good. And the trade lowdown.
Yeah, the trade lowdown starts on Wednesday, October 3.
The Wednesday after the grand final.
Whatever it is. 7 p.m. on Fox Footy. Anthony Hudson is hosting.
Hello. Kingy, I think, is there.
Yeah, Kingy, Lee Montagna, and I'm involved as well. And Wednesday, Thursday night, and then the whole week, the next week, and then the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of the final week of the trade period.
Oh, my gosh, that Wednesday night is going to be insane, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it's going to be nuts. We do, yeah.
Are you doing a live show for that, I wonder? Because doesn't it finish at night?
I reckon they might
be. Yeah, it finishes at 8:30 p.m.
Big chance. Oh. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's exciting stuff.
It's going to be very, very exciting. So you'll be all over that. We'll also be all over the grand final this weekend on foxfooty.com.au, and then we'll be looking ahead to the trade and the draft period. That has been the Fox Footy podcast. All thanks to NIB. Health cover how it should be. And keep clicking back to foxfooty.com.au.